Good evening. It is January 14th, 2026, and this is our School Board Policy Committee meeting. I am officially calling this meeting to order and would like to respectfully, as a committee of the school board, we would like to take this moment to respectfully acknowledge that we are residing on the traditional land of the Dene people. Our mission is to, as a community, create supportive learning environments where all students thrive. Ms. Corbett, would you please call the roll?
Diana Dillard,
Here.
Jane Bedford,
Here.
Catherine Doster,
Here.
Kelly Scanlon is absent today, Laura McDonald,
Here.
April Smith, possibly will join us via Zoom, Sydney Mullen,
Here.
Joe Malbert Narvaez, Mia Royce,
Here.
Sarah Campbell Hester, Mary Willey and Sarah Gillum.
Here.
Thank you.
Thank you. And just by way of, I don't know. We need to make sure that we're within 6 inches of the mic so that way the individuals that are listening can hear us. And then also just make sure that your mic is off so we don't have any of the fun hot mic moments. And so I am new to the policy committee. Miss Maple has been reassigned, and I've been assigned to be here, and I'm excited to be here. And I did listen into your last meeting. I know that you guys went in and did some introductions, and I also know that some of us are new. And so I just want to give the a moment for everyone to reintroduce themselves, please. And also, if you could also share why you're here tonight or why you were excited to be on the policy committee, that would be fabulous. And we'll start with Ms. Mullen.
Hi, my name is Dr. Sydney Mullen. I am a entomologist here in Fairbanks, Alaska. I also have one current child at University Park, and I have an incoming kindergartner for the 2026 year. So, and a little 2-year-old as well. So, I like policy stuff. I like digging into the nooks and crannies of different odds and ends with respect to our community, and so I'm happy to be here.
I'm Mia Royce. I'm a senior at West Valley High School. I just thought I do like policy and sort of all of like the back end and I guess rules. But yeah.
I'm Catherine Doster. I teach fourth, fifth grade combination class at Ladd Elementary, and I have a passion for policy.
I'm Jane Bedford. I'm the principal at Hunter Elementary, so the FPA representative on policy. And I live in policy every day in what I do. So I like to know all the ins and outs.
I'm Mary Willie, the program director for FNA Johnson O'Malley program, and I represent FNA in the tribal community.
Good evening. I'm Laura McDonald. I'm the Chief Human Resources Officer for the school district, and I love policy and especially looking at it from the lens of enforcing the policy.
And I'm Diana Dillard. I'm the Student Discipline and Policy Specialist, so it's part of my job to lead and coordinate policy revisions for the district.
And my name's Sarah Gillum. I'm the secondary assistant superintendent, and I oversee Diana's role in the district, and then also, of course, work with principals every day. So, also live a lot in policy.
Thank you, everyone. We are now going to turn the time over to Ms. Dillard for an administration report and update.
Thank you. So, as far as our policy updates, as you know, we've discussed before that we are doing a major policy overhaul to move over to the Alaska Association of School Boards policy manual. We have spent a lot of time on Article 5, which is students, which will replace our Chapter 10. And the first reading of the first half of that article will be next Tuesday. And so that will go for 2 readings. We do have another work session on the 26th to go over a few remaining student policies that we did not get to in the last 2 work sessions. But once we get that wrapped up, then we'll also be bringing the second half of Article 5 to the board. After that, we'll dig into Article 4, which is personnel policy, which replaces our chapters 5 and 6. And then we're pretty much almost done. There's one article, Article 7, which is on facilities, which is a very short article that shouldn't take too much effort. So by the end of this year, we should be, I think, fully moved over to for policy over to the new platform.
Thank you, Ms. Dillard. Does anyone have any questions for Ms. Dillard? Okay, great. We're now moving on to our action items, and there's only one action item at this time, and I'm looking for a motion to approve the minutes.
I move to approve. We on the minutes from the policy committee meeting on October 8th, 2025.
Is there a second?
I second that.
Thank you. It's been moved by Ms. Bedford and seconded by Dr. Mullen. Any objections? Okay, passes. Okay, we now move on to the discussion items. And the first thing on the list is board policy. 4119-22. Does anyone want to open that up for discussion? Usually does that. Great. Let's do that, Ms. Dillard.
I'll at least get it started with a brief overview. So this is an example of an Article 4 personnel policy. I just want to explain the numbering system because it looks a little different with personnel policy. The reason we have three numbers is because if it's a 4-1, that is for certificated staff, 4-2 is for classified staff, and 4-3 is supervisory and management staff. So when you see all three of those together, the intent of AASB is that it is an all personnel policy. Somewhat similar to how ours is structured, we have Chapter 5, which is all personnel essentially, and then Chapter 6 is broken up 6-1. Is certificated, 6-2 is classified, and 6-3 is management. So just a little different. This will be replacing our current board policy 554. We looked at that policy and the AASB model policy to finalize this policy. And I think the only thing that I wanted to add, and maybe we'll see if questions come up about it, but I was interested in the legal reference. These legal references are actually embedded by AASB, and I had not really looked at it before. I don't pay a lot of attention to the legal references, and I was researching that today, actually, and that is very specific to students, and what we can do or mandate as far as employee dress is very different than student dress. So I'm going to go back and look at that legal reference. And we can maybe talk more about the legal reference when we look at student dress code, but I would not consider that a good legal reference for the ability that we have to have professionalism standards for dress in an employment situation. But with that, I will turn it over to any questions or comments from all of you.
Giving everyone a moment just to look it over. Okay, seeing none, we can, I guess, move on to the next.
Yep, thank you. The next one is 5132, dress and grooming. So this is a student policy in Article 5. It is not on the first reading next Tuesday. It'll be part of the second half of the packet. So we certainly have time to look at adjustments if there's feedback from this committee on the policy. This will be replacing in part policy 1041.1. In our chapter 10, policy 1041.1 is actually freedom of speech, which dress was included as being part of that because it is similar to the right of freedom of speech expression. But the way AASB is structured, is it is separate. There is a robust administrative regulation that's attached to 1041.1, which is only about dress. And so that administrative regulation will be carried over to 5132. And I guess since I brought it up, I'll just go ahead and explain a little bit what I found with the case. The case was an Alaska Supreme Court case. It was about the, it was in the 70s, and it was about the length of a man's hair or a boy's hair. And ultimately, the court ruled in favor of the student. We cannot regulate student appearance based solely on taste, fashion, or convention. Our restrictions on dress must be tied directly to safety or preventing substantial disruption to learning. So that's essentially the findings and precedent set by that court case. But with that, we did look at the AASB model policy two to draft and finalize this policy.
I have a question.
Ms. Wiley.
Is there a reason these policies are so vague, especially the student policies?
I mean, the policies are designed to be the who, what, and why, essentially. So they're setting the standard of who it affects, what we're accomplishing, and why. What are our, what's the philosophy or our guiding principles or legal standards? Most policies don't even have an administrative regulation. But when we need further guidance on how we implement a policy, that is where the administrative regulation is used for that. And I guess I would say that when we do have a robust administrative regulation, it can be problematic to put procedures in policy and regulation because then it kind of separates out where those procedures live. But that's how they're structured.
Ms. Bedford?
So just to clarify, our current AR is going to stay in place as far as those specific details. This is just the overarching structure, correct?
That's true. We'll probably review the administrative regulation because we have been doing that systematically with the move with policies also. But yes, yeah, that administrative regulation procedures exist now. Yeah.
Is there a way to, oh, I'm so sorry.
We'll go Ms. Doster and then Dr. Mullen.
Good, you're good. Go ahead.
So is it up to each individual school to set, like the principal or admin team to set the individual dress code?
No. So we do have, if you look at administrative regulation 1041.1, that is our dress code for the district. It lives in the student handbook, and principals and schools should be following it. If there's gray area, all of them. Yes. Yeah. If there are things that are maybe not addressed in the AR, there could potentially be additional school rules that help define certain things, but it can't contradict the administrative regulation, and they should be following the administrative regulation.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Mullen?
Is there a way to quantify substantially disrupt the educational process? Just in light of things becoming more and more heated across the nation, I wonder what, like, is there a way to fall back on a policy and say, like, this is what substantial means to us? Because to me, I think it is very vague, and I feel like certain kids could be targets unintentionally if people felt upset about certain clothing items or, I don't know, is there a way to quantify substantial? If that makes
I'll
sense.
Start, and then I think I bet Ms. Gillum has some good input on that. But that does come from legal precedent that's legal precedent speak also. We have similar language in student conduct policy, in the freedom of speech and expression policy, religious expression policy. So we can't be exact with what it means. If there were to be some sort of issue that would come up, it would take the professional's assessment of the situation. And it there are some standards as far as what might be disruptive in a classroom. It's an assessment of what is a disruptive to a person, to a classroom, or to a whole school. That's one of the standards that they look at. But getting too specific in the policy, I think, could be problematic.
Generally speaking, if schools ask for guidance on that, our guidance is multiple classrooms of students would be disrupted by it. So not just one student or a couple students, it would be multiple classrooms of students that's kind of created a disruption.
Right. We will go ahead and move on to the next if there's no other discussion on this. Ms. Dillard.
Thank you. This next one is ethical and professional conduct. This is in our personnel policy. We have this first section that's under ethical and professional standards. We do have that policy in three separate places, pretty much written exactly the same way. And then we added professional boundaries of employees with students. And so that is brand new language to our district. It's something that ASB has as a policy. We modeled our language after the ASB policy. However, they chose to put it in the student chapter, and we wanted it in the personnel chapter, so we put it here. Very important policy, one that we've been discussing for a while. There's other guidance that is provided to staff through HR and in different ways, but having in policy has been something we've been needing to do for a while. We did have, you'll see the section on housing and transportation. That exists in our policy. And so we chose to put that all together with the boundaries policy. The language under transportation of students and housing of students is also in the negotiated agreement. And then I think with that, a lot of work done on this policy. Definitely not the exact ASB model. We edited it quite a bit, looked at other examples, and had legal review.
Ms. McDonald.
Yes, ma'am. I have a question specifically about this particular policy under paragraph 3, housing of students. I'd like to learn if there may potentially be room to allow for foster parents, especially in emergency situations, to not face disciplinary action for housing students in an emergent situation.
Ms. Dillard.
And let me just read it again real quick, because I remember discussing this a little bit and I want to remind myself exactly what it says. I think it's covered, really. I think the important piece in that first sentence is district employees acting solely in their capacity as district employees. So we're not talking about somebody who is an emergency placement for a student or a foster parent already. We're talking about somebody who's acting solely in the capacity as an employee. A question back to you through the chair, do you think that needs more guidance?
I don't specifically think that it needs more guidance, but I think that may be left up to interpretation.
Mm-hmm.
I have a comment or a question on this.
Willie? I'm sorry. Is it Willie or Wiley? I'm Willie. Yes. Okay. Thank you.
In a community as small as ours, there may be a situation where a student has an attachment to or is bonded with a teacher and something in their house that went haywire and that they needed emergency placement, but that teacher's not licensed. And agencies has reached out to say, hey, this is who this kid mentioned. Is this something we can do? Is this, and that's in their capacity as a employee of the school district because that's how they know the kid. How would that play into a situation like this? And I know that's pushing the boundaries of what if, but what if?
I still think even in that scenario, it's there are a lot of formal processes happening in that moment and oversight over that situation. I mean, even though the connection is because they're a district employee, they're making a formal placement decision or, you know, a directive from OCS or whatever that might look like, I think. And there's also language in here about approval from the superintendent. So I think that if it was, I mean, I know it says parent, guardian, and the superintendent, but I still think that it would be important that that placement had some oversight from an outside entity that had the authority to do so. Potentially, though, we have talked about, I mean, there is going to be an administrative regulation to this policy. So that's something that could certainly be targeted more specifically on what those processes look like. I also think I'm a little hesitant to dig too much into the policy language for these two sections specifically, because this is the language verbatim from that's in the negotiated agreement already. So that's something that we would have to talk through further.
Ms. Corbett, has anyone joined us online? Has anyone joined us online? No further discussion. We'll move on to the next one. Ms. Dillard.
Next policy. Okay, so I think I explained this a little bit in the email, but I am going to give you an overview of the wellness policy and the requirements around the wellness policy and how we are using the policy committee to do this review of the wellness policy. So if you'll just be patient with me, I'm going to give you an overview. We are a local agency, and as a local agency that receives federal funding for breakfast and lunch programs, we are required to have a wellness policy. At a minimum, we are required to have specific goals for nutrition promotion and education, physical activity, and other school-based activities that promote student wellness. Districts are required to review and consider evidence-based strategies in determining these goals. So I would say that in a lot of review of this policy, we acknowledge that this is largely accomplished through the through curriculum development, especially when it comes to nutrition education and physical education. So we use that information too. We reviewed that information too. This was reviewed by internal professionals and departments. We use the AASB model policy. So the AASB model policy is the guidance from that state entity that this would be the best policy to capture all of the things that we're required to meet wellness standards in a policy. I will say that we did not copy it exactly. It was the AASB model is very, very long, and they repeat a lot of things that we already have in other policies. So we chose not to do that. Specifically, we have policies on food service, and to get into too much of repeating of content, you run into the problem of contradictions down the road when you're doing policy edits. So we chose not to fully copy everything from the AASB manual. We also looked at state best practices. In the spring, when we talked about this policy, we looked at recess best practices. So that was one of the things that we solidified and changed in this policy from the spring. And then the next minimum requirement, standards and nutrition guidelines for all foods and beverages sold to students on school campus during the school day have to be consistent with school meal nutrition standards and the smart snacks in school nutrition standards. So all of that content is in board policies 3550 and 3554, which we did link into the agenda. In a nutshell, they very specifically require that food served by the school and sold by others during the hours of 12 a.m. to 30 minutes after the instructional day. And that includes vending machines, fundraisers, school stores, and of course, regular food service have to follow the Smart Snacks guidelines. This does not include items not intended for consumption outside of school. So that came up, I think, going back a couple of years where when one of these policies were discussed, there was a lot of questions about, well, what about fundraisers? Well, if it's not intended for consumption at school, it doesn't actually break any rules to be selling those items during the school day. Another standard is for all foods and beverages provided but not sold to students during the school day, classroom parties, classroom snacks brought by parents, and other food given as incentive. We have to have standards around those. I was a bit confused about what that meant when I was first researching this. I thought it meant that we had to follow some sort of standards. It does not mean that. It just means that we have to have our own standards, which we do. We do not have a directive to, we basically say that we don't have to follow Smart Snack rules when it comes to school parties and celebrations. So we don't restrict, in our current policies, we don't restrict the ability for parents to bring cupcakes or whatever that might fall outside of those Smart Snack standards. Our policy in AR does talk about food used for instructional purposes cannot be gum, candy, or soda. So we do have that piece. We have to have policies for food and beverage marketing that allows marketing and advertising of only those foods and beverages that meet the Smart Snacks in school nutrition standards. And we do. We have policy 3554. And when we talk about marketing, that includes marketing on vending machines and such. We have to have a description of public involvement, public updates, policy leadership, and evaluation plan. And so a lot of that you'll see in this board policy 5040, and a lot of it also existed in board policy 1061, which is what 5040 is replacing. Wellness policy leadership has to have the responsibility to ensure each school complies with the policy. And so that is partially accomplished by nutrition services. They are regularly audited. And then district administration ensures guidance is reviewed with principals. And this is all part information that's provided in school handbooks and student handbooks. We must permit by the general public and the school community participation in the wellness policy. And so, honestly, this has not been super consistent, which is why we discussed using the policy committee to meet that goal. And then last spring, feedback from the policy committee helped guide some protocols that we did change in the draft policy 5040. We were talking about it last spring, but we still have not actually brought it to the school board. That will happen, though, in the next couple months. We have to do a triennial assessment of the wellness policy. That has not been a district practice, but we did do this in the spring, so it was done. And we worked with nutrition services and teaching and learning to make sure that information was correct. And I'm going to go over that briefly, not the whole thing. It's a lot of information, but at least I want to hit on some areas where we have zeros, meaning no content for certain things. So we'll look at that here in just a second. And then we are required to make records available to the public and keep documentation on the review of policies. The triennial assessment was shared through the Nutrition Services newsletter. And then the policy committee and materials and any board meeting agenda items are all going to be public information. And then we have the policies, of course, on policy online and in the student and staff handbooks. So with that, if you look at the triennial assessment, you should have a copy of that. If you see a zero, it means something is not mentioned at all. One means weak, and two means we're good. And I was mostly concerned about ensuring that we were meeting federal requirements. So that's going to be the first section. And this is all about policy language. It's not about what we do, what our practices are. It's about what we have in policy. So that's what was actually assessed. So when we look at that first page of federal requirements, about four down, we had a zero on free drinking water is available during meals. We know that that's a thing that we do, but other districts might not, you know, have those resources. But we added it to the policy. So you'll see that line in this new draft 5040, and you might wonder why we put that in there. It's because we need to. The next one that was a one, this is about training nutritional services staff. We briefly mentioned training, which is why we just got the one. I talked to Ms. Rouse with Nutrition Services, and they have to follow certain training guidelines as part of USDA requirements. So the practice is there, but we chose not, or we don't have it explicitly stated in the policy, and I chose not to make it explicit in the policy. So we have the one, but I didn't make any changes to try to get to that number two. Since I've been talking a lot, and do we have any questions, clarifying questions or anything so far with this information? And certainly if I'm saying we chose not to elaborate on this thing, if you feel like we need to, or if you have suggestions on what we could do, then we certainly have time still to edit the policy to include that information. The next one down to the bottom, which is a zero, regulates food and beverages served at class parties and other celebrations. So I couldn't edit this. It was done in the spring. At the time, I was operating under the assumption that we had to regulate those things. But like I said, we don't have to regulate them. We just have to have a standard, and we do. So this shouldn't even be a zero. And and at this time, I think the district is comfortable allowing class parties and celebrations and food brought by parents to be what the parents want to bring. So we don't plan on changing that or making it more restrictive. And the last one addresses how all relevant groups will participate. We address the requirement, but not really exactly how we're going to do that. I don't recommend really making any changes to the policy to explain what that process is going to look like, because it's kind of fluid and we're trying something new this year by using the policy committee. So I think it's subject to change how we bring groups in to participate in the policy making. On the second page, the top three are pretty similar. We address these subjects, but not necessarily the specifics, how and who. So we didn't make any changes. And then addresses making triennial assessment results available to the public. That was not addressed in our previous policy, but that language is now in the current draft policy. So that's been fixed or improved. Considering we look like we're doing great on time, I think I would like to go through the remainder of the triennial assessment, but only looking at the zeros to see if anything comes up for that. Again, these are now suggestions by the federal government, not requirements, not federal requirements. So the second one down is a zero, addresses how to handle feeding children with unpaid meal balances without stigmatizing them. That is 100% a practice in our district. It is not explicit in the policy, and that policy is 3553. Board policy 3553 was a policy that we brought to the board last year, and so it's not set right now on a cycle to come back anytime soon. However, if that was something that needed to be reviewed as part of this wellness review, then we could certainly discuss that. And then at the bottom, there's two zeros. Exemptions for infrequent school-sponsored fundraisers. We don't have that anywhere in policy, but it is a state process. Any school can do a waiver with the state to sell whatever they want as part of a fundraiser during the school day. And every elementary and middle school, no, every elementary school can do that, can have 10 days essentially free in a year to sell things outside of the Smart Snack guidelines. And then secondary schools, middle and high school, have 25 days a year. So it's just a waiver process through the state, but we don't have that spelled out in policy. Any questions about any of that? Okay.
Miss Willie, could you turn on your mic? Sorry, thank you.
Oh, thank you.
What about the last one, the one about caffeine?
Good catch. I just skimmed over that. We have caffeine in high school vending machines. Yeah. I don't think it's energy drinks, but we have sodas which have caffeine. And so at this time, there was no discussion about changing that.
I asked because you were talking about having a policy, and the zero said that you didn't have the policy. Mm-hmm. So I know there's caffeine in the high schools.
Yeah. Yeah.
I would hope there's caffeine in the high schools, but it says you get with the zero, you don't have a policy.
That's correct. Yeah, that would be an example of we don't. And again, these are recommendations, not requirements. So we're in the realm of this would be best practice per federal regulations on student wellness. But we have chosen not to put that in policy nor practice. Yeah.
Ms. Bedford.
Ms. Dillard, can you speak to a little bit more the handle of feeding children with unpaid meal balances? So you referenced 3553. And I know that that's always a challenge just across. So I'm wondering about whether there is some language needed in policy or not.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's great feedback. And it's something that certainly back when we were really looking at that policy, we were not thinking about this, this wellness umbrella and what we're required to do. So it just did not come up. There's some minimal language in the policy about how we can't identify them differently. But when you have a situation where a kid, you know, has a balance, it's certainly been a hot topic even over the last year, the community wanting to know how we handle that. So I think that might be a good policy, even if it's potentially addressed in an administrative regulation, to look at closer.
Ms. Gillum. I guess that was one question I just had thinking through this is when you do this review and we're looking at it, does it consider both school board policy and administrative regulation, or is it just policy?
That is a great question because I was worried about that because everything that you see references is at one policy. But I talked to Ms. Rouse about that this year because they were audited and they reviewed all of our policies and there were no issues. So I think we're okay.
Mm-hmm. I just, because to go to Ms. Bedford's question, I guess looking at that specific policy, there is no AR to it right now, 3553, the free and reduced priced meals. I would say from administration standpoint, we provided a lot of general how-to guidance this year. So I think it could be something that we could review the guidance that we had for this year specifically, and then make some improvements to it and maybe consider adding an administrative regulation to that policy.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Moving on to the next page. The zero on addressing food not being used as a reward. We don't have that in policy. I don't really know about practices. I bet it sneaks in here and there. But we really didn't talk too closely, you know, like, I don't know. I honestly don't know what the standard practice would be, but I would think maybe it's sometimes okay to use food as a reward.
Dr. Mullen.
Oh, I guess in my thought would be, hey, if everyone tries really hard and they all turn in their assignment, we can have a, I don't know, popcorn treat. Yeah, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. And it that this subject will come up again on the next page, and where it's more about ensuring that we're we'll get to that. I think that I don't think that we have any goals to try to put structure around what that looks like, but if anybody has any ideas, okay. So I think that's the end of that pay. Nope, the next one was there too. Addresses availability of free drinking water throughout the day. We talked about that. It was added to the policy. On the next page, fifth one down is a zero. Addresses qualifications for physical education teachers. That is not in policy. It's not something that we felt should be in policy. That lives in other guidance. Addresses providing physical education training for physical teachers. Same thing. We felt like that lives in other guidance. Addresses physical education exemption requirements for all students. That's briefly mentioned in the administrative regulation that's attached to this policy right now. But that is also very structured in curriculum and credits for middle and higher for high school. Any questions about any of those? And then addresses physical education substitutions for all students. That ties back into exemptions that are allowed for students, exemptions from physical education class. So again, not in policy, guidance lives elsewhere. Down towards the bottom, joint and shared use agreements for physical activity participation in all schools. We don't have anything like that in policy. And I think that, I mean, for us, that speaks to, we have a facilities policy that goes into how we share the facility with other nonprofits and groups, and how we have very, you know, cheap pricing for nonprofits compared to like a profit that wants to use a school. And that's to support other activities and physical activity in our facilities. District addresses active transport for all K-12. So this is about promoting walking and biking. That's not something that we have in policy, nor did we really know how to tackle that one. So we didn't add it. Addresses using physical activity as a ward. This was about encouraging the regulations, encouraging replacing food rewards with physical activity rewards. So that would have been one of their recommendations to focus on rewarding extra recess time or something like that. But it was tied to lessening food reward. And that's not something that we have in policy. The last one addresses physical activity not being met or not being used as a punishment. We did not have that in policy, but we do now. So that was added to this 5040. We do not use physical activity to punish kids. And then on the next page, we have a zero where it says addresses strategies to support employee wellness. That's not something that we added to this student wellness policy. And then lastly, the last zero addresses the establishment of an ongoing school building level wellness committee. This is not something that we've had structure around, and it's not something that we've focused on as part of this policy work, but it is important to ensure that, you know, practices are aligning with our policy. And so that's something for further discussion with district administration to see exactly how best to do that. I mean, certainly we're bringing the information to principals and expecting that that flows down into the administration of their buildings. But there's recommendations to have a school level school building committees for student wellness. And with that, any other questions on the assessment itself?
Yep, Dr. Mullen.
So back to the physical education exemption requirements for all students. You said that there was an administrative regulation that briefly touched on that.
That would not be administrative regulation. I think it's very structured in curriculum. And I'm sorry, I don't even know exactly what that looks like, but there are so many exemptions that are allowed, and there's specific, maybe Ms. Gillum might be able to speak to this, but, and then there's examples of, for like an example in high school, you have to have so many credits of PE. There's going to be certain reasons why you can do exemptions. And once those are approved, exemptions do have to be approved through the teaching and learning department. And then they have alternative classes or credits that they can do to replace those PE. But that's all part of curriculum. It's not in policy or AR.
So it's not like this particular student can't perform this 3-week, you know, swimming class or something, just as an example. This is more, they cannot participate in PE as a subject for the year or something like that. So it's broader than like one topic within PE for a given grade. Does that make sense?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. I think
making sure I understood.
Okay. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I think it speaks to maybe some physical issues that make it prohibitive or something along those lines. Yeah. Anything else on the triennial assessment? Well, thank you for listening to all of that. It's great that we are accomplishing this. So the actual policy is 5040, and you'll find that after the triennial assessment. Again, this is one that we reviewed in the spring, and the primary changes made after the spring meeting were to, well, we solidified that we did want to keep recess restrictions to be minimized. And then we did a lot of work on the administrative regulation and work with elementary principals specifically to guide what that looks like to ensure that we're using it as a very, very last resort. And then we did, as a suggestion from one of the committee members, we added some language about allergies, food allergy prevention and response. So that was a great suggestion from a member last year. And other than those two changes, it has not been modified since that spring meeting. Oh, and the drinking water. Sorry, we added the drinking water. Yes.
Oh, Ms. Doster. I will attest that the students do use the drinking water, the free drinking water. They use it quite often.
Thank you.
Hey, thank you so much, Ms. Dillard, for all of the run-throughs. Does anyone have any last thoughts or impressions with any of the policies that were brought up for discussion today that they'd like to share? Okay, our future meeting date is not set right now. It's to be determined. And without any objection, we are adjourned for the evening. Thank you. Thanks.